You're listening to the MLB.com Hot Stove Podcast, presented by K Jewelers. Every kiss begins with K.
Welcome once again to the MLB.com Hot Stove Podcast, presented by K Jewelers. It is Matt Wehmeyer alongside Jim Duquette once again on this, the 21st day of December, 4 days before Christmas. That is hard to believe. And Duke, before we dive into things here, did you catch the end of the Miss Universe pageant Sunday night? Do you know what happened?
Yeah, I did see what happened there, Matt. And I got to tell you, I hope it doesn't happen to one of these free agents that's still available.
Right.
Picking the wrong team or announcing the wrong team.
Right. Because that would be embarrassing. Or can you imagine if Bud Selig had come out? Not Bud Selig. I'm behind the times here. If Rob Manfred had come out.
Right.
Yeah, so I don't want to shortchange Mr. Manfred. Say the Royals win the World Series. He gives the trophy to the Mets.
Yeah.
How embarrassing.
That would be a little embarrassing.
Oh, that poor woman from Columbia.
Feel bad for her, and I feel bad for Steve Harvey, too.
I feel bad for Steve Harvey, too. Yeah. I don't think Steve's going to be in front of a live microphone for us sometime here. But we are, somewhat, as we bring you this podcast again on December 21st. And that is our awkward segue into the free agent pitching market. Duke, we have seen the four big names find new homes. Price, Greinke, Jordan Zimmermann, and Johnny Cueto, of course. Now you kind of transition to that secondary market. You're talking about guys like Scott Kazmir, Wei-Yin Chen, Mike Leake, Giovanni Gallardo, to name a couple. Now, Duke, when you're talking about a group like this, how much is draft pick compensation going to affect these guys? You talk about guys like Leake and Kazmir in particular. They don't have draft picks attached to them. So how do you think that's going to shake out with this group?
Well, I think we've seen that with the level of interest, you know, and the willingness to maybe sign sooner rather than later. So, you know, Kazmir has narrowed his search down to apparently six teams. That doesn't sound like it's narrowed down very much.
No, not really.
Six teams. You're still in, what, the quarterfinals of the NCAA tournament when you get to six. So call me when you get to two or three. But
sure.
You know, I think with them, for sure, the draft pick, you know, when you're paying X amount, you're paying 4 or 5 years and you're paying top dollar for any free agent, you have to factor in the cost of losing your first round pick, too, if you're not one of the top 10 teams that are protected. And, you know, that dollar amount is, you know, any teams value it anywhere from $4 to $6 million or more. You know, obviously it's going to be something that you're going to have value, you know, 6-7 years down the road if you have that asset in your organization. So, you know, there's a tangible value that teams are giving up if they sign one of these guys that have qualifying offers. And so I think that's where a lot of the attention is right now. The other guys that have the qualifying offers attached to them, they fall back unless you're a premium guy. And then teams will have to sit there and decide, do they want to give up a first round pick at that point for them, or do they want to wait? A couple of years ago, if you remember, the Orioles gave up first round, second rounders for Nelson Cruz and Ubaldo Jimenez. Well, the price tag was right also for them in terms of what they paid out and what they got for value at the major league level. So there's a willingness to do that. I think you may see that happen with some of these guys.
It's a tough call. I mean, teams, you know, you can't have it both ways. You want to have it both ways. You want to be able to bring these guys in. You want to keep your prospects. You want to be able to accumulate draft picks and not give those away. It's a balancing act, and that's what makes the hot stove season so entertaining every single year. Duke, one guy in particular I want to focus on, Wei-Yin Chen, because over the weekend, I read a quote from his agent, Scott Boris, and he said, he kind of put it out there and said, this might sound crazy on the surface, but I want my guy to get $100 million. And when a fan looks at that at first, no disrespect to Wei-Yin Chen, but they're going to think, you're not going to pay $100 million for him. But then you start to look at some of the numbers comparable to Jordan Zimmermann, who got $110 million. Is Wei-Yin Chen, in your mind, a $100 million guy?
Well, and listen, he had a better year than Jeff Samardzija, too. You know,
sure.
Samardzija got 90. So if you look at it from that perspective and making comparisons, you know, here's a guy who pitched in the American League the last 4 years, been very successful in the American League East. He battled a little bit of health issues, but nothing serious. So I understand why you'd be asking for that kind of money. You know, pitching to a low 3 ERA. There's a lot of things that he brings to the equation. Now, you also have to give up a draft pick, too. You know, and I didn't really think, as he was pitching through that he was a guy that you would be willing to pay $20 million per year, let's say, over 5 years, plus give up a first-round draft pick. And I think that's where you're going to run into some of the issues with a guy like Chen. You didn't have to give that up for Samardzija in particular. You did with Zimmermann. But I think overall, I don't doubt the agent in him trying to get close to what he's looking for. I mean, he's been very successful, and he's got a very good pitcher in Chen. I think he's one of those guys that got swept up and a little bit underrated, that how good he is. When you break down his numbers, you go, wow, left-handed pitcher too. On top of that, not a lot of good lefties out there. You know, I don't think he's going to get $100 million, but I wouldn't be surprised if he gets close to what Samardzija ended up with, which is around $90
million. Yeah, the Samardzija contract still I find stunning. I mean, he was very good with the Cubs, very good with the A's, but just a disastrous year with the White Sox in 2015. And the Giants are, you know, it's a big bet here that he's going to bounce back and be the guy that we know him to be. And maybe if he's in a rotation with Bumgarner and Johnny Cueto now, there's a little less pressure on him to be the guy. He can settle into that middle of the rotation role and be what he was. Big gamble by the Giants, but we'll see, you know, how it pays off. And Duke, of these four guys that we're talking about, again, Kazmir, Chen, Leek, and Gallardo, when you remove the factors from the equation of draft pick compensation and money, just in terms of pure ability, who is the most appealing of this group to you?
Well, I think that, you know, when you look at it, I mean, I think Chen is probably the most attractive of them all. Yeah, Kazmir, you again, I didn't like the way he pitched in particular the last 6 weeks of the season. Gallardo, his stuff has played up. He's probably last on that list. And because of Leek's age, you know, he probably falls somewhere in the middle. Kazmir is the oldest of that group. You know, I think Chen clearly for me is number one. And then from there, it's between Kazmir and Leek. Probably take the younger guy in Leek, but Kazmir is obviously very enticing because he's left-handed, and probably Gallardo fourth. But Gallardo is pitched well in the American League and National League, too. And you know what you're going to get. You're going to get 180, 190 innings, and you're going to get consistency. The only thing is you got to give up a draft pick. So, you know, I think they all have, their value to some degree, but I probably would rank them that way.
Yeah, they're all appealing in their own rights, but none of them as appealing, I think we can both agree, as Jose Fernandez. We still hear his name being bandied about. We still hear buzz regarding him. The Marlins ace, 23 years old. He is coming off the TJ surgery, but the ability is just off the charts. You know, we're hearing, you know, we hear one report that says, you know, the Marlins are shopping him. Then the GM will say, well, no, we're not. I mean, does the truth fall somewhere in the middle? What do you think is really going on here?
So, yeah, I think the similar, answer lies with how when you talk to the A's about Sonny Gray, they say, well, we don't have an intention to trade him. We don't have... they use kind of those type of words and play on words a little bit. They're not shopping him. I agree. I think they're taking offers though, I think that's what you do if you're the Marlins general manager there, for the president of baseball operations, Michael Hill. You're taking offers. If you have an interest in our player, we'll listen. You have to overwhelm us with prospects, and we'll listen. And I wouldn't be surprised, because he has 3 years left on that contract. It's going to be a little limited in his innings pitched this year, and there's probably not a likelihood you can sign him long term. I think they were exploring that. Didn't sound like it went that far. So, you know, I do think that there's some issues there on that side of things, that if they found the right deal, they would move him. I still think, though, it's not that likely, because it's hard to ask. You know, he had some shoulder issues when he came back from Tommy John. It's hard to ask full freight. It's hard to pay full freight if you're a team, knowing he had some issues there. Even if he had the health issues kind of, you signed off on him, I would have a little bit of concern going forward with him until you saw he was healthy. So I think it's going to be hard to kind of work out a deal between whoever is interested in Fernandez and the Marlins.
Yeah, I agree. I don't see him really moving anywhere before opening day of 2016, but it's interesting that they are listening to offers, at least, or so it seems. Now, the part of the equation that kind of fascinates me is, you know, Don Mattingly is brought in as the new manager. Do you think they made him aware that, you know, look, we want you as our guy, but I'm going to tell you right now, we might get rid of your ace, this guy who might be one of the most transcendent pitchers in baseball. Do you think, was he blindsided by this after he was hired? How do you think that played out?
Well, I don't know. I think when you look at it on the surface, things have changed since they hired him to where they are now. You know, I don't know if you had any intention of trading Fernandez at the time. And Donnie's, you know, going in and said, I've got really two good players. I mean, superstar-type players. Stanton on the position player side, Fernandez on the pitching side. And this is a desirable a setup. They're going to give me a long-term deal. Dodgers only had a short-term deal on the table. So you kind of go into it that way. And then, you know, I think after the fact, you know, there's only so much he can really say to you know, on the Fernandez front. I mean, he's going to, you know, obviously would want him to stay there. But I think you also have to look at it organizationally, if they can make themselves better long-term. Then I think that, you know, there's a selling point to be made. And, you know, he's got a 5-year deal, 4 or 5-year deal. So he's going to be there for a while. you know, they could certainly spend the money and go get some other pitching that's out there in the marketplace, or, you know, wait and then look at 2017 potentially as well.
Yeah, I know one club that would love to have him. Look, let's face it, the other 29 teams would love to have a Jose Fernandez, you know, Tommy John or not. One team that would really love to have him, especially in light of what's gone on the last week or so, the LA Dodgers. I mean, what a weird saga they had with the Sashi Iwakuma at the tail end of last week. A three-year, $45 million deal pulled off the table. Iwakuma's physical, not to the Dodgers' liking. And then at the 11th hour, Jerry Dipoto swoops in and gets him back and brings him back to Seattle. So a nice little coup there for Dipoto, now with the helm of the Mariners. Now, that leaves the Dodgers in quite a bind. They lose out on Iwakuma. They lose Greinke to a division rival, no less. And Duke, one name that's come up in recent days since this happened, it's become a hot name all of a sudden, Jake Odorizzi of the Tampa Bay Rays. Are the Rays in a position, you know, you never want to deal away starting pitching just because, but do you feel they have enough of a surplus of starting pitching to where they could maybe deal away an Odorizzi to upgrade that offense, which has always been just kind of so-so?
Well, they do. I think they you know, and this is something that they've done, what, year in and year out. They take one of their starters and they trade him for prospects. And, you know, they did it with Garza and Shields. I mean, you know, the list goes on and on. You know, they were looking at a guy like Alex Cobb, but he's coming off the injury. So you look at the rest of their club, they got Archer, who they have under a favorable contract. So it's not likely him. I think that Odorizzi is one guy you have to go out there and take a look at. He's young. He's really good. He's a middle-of-the-rotation starter at this point, I think. And, you know, you look at some of the other depth that they have. I mean, they already traded away Carnes, but they still have a lot of depth, including Matt Moore. They still have Blake Snell, the pitcher of the year in the minor leagues. And so, you know, they're dealing with all those, Ramirez and Smiley. I mean, it's really a loaded pitching staff. So if they take Odorizzi and move him to a team like the Dodgers or even the Cardinals, because he's a St. Louis kid, you know, I wouldn't be surprised in that end if we saw him move. I also think, because we've heard Boxberger's name mentioned, I kind of envisioned the Dodgers trying to overwhelm them for an Odorizzi and a Boxberger or a McGee type to add some bullpen depth.
Now, if the Rays do go ahead and pull the trigger on an Odorizzi trade to a team like you just mentioned, two teams that I don't want to say are desperate to have them, but they've had rough off seasons, meaning the Dodgers and the Cardinals, justifiably, what could the Rays get back in return? Because we've seen the Marlins going back to Fernandez, ask for the moon and the stars for him. Odorizzi's not on Fernandez's level, that's obvious. But given the situations those two clubs are in, meaning St. Louis and L.A., what could the Rays get back for a guy
like
that?
Well, I think the Rays are, you know, they'd have to be looking for one of the young pitchers, Urias or De Leon, maybe both. You know, they're not going to take a guy off of the Major League club necessarily. They just picked up Michael Johnson from the White Sox in that deal in the Todd Frazier three-team trade. You could look at him, the Thompson kid, the outfield. I mean, they have, I think if you're the Dodgers, you try to overwhelm them with numbers. The Rays, when they get four or five guys that could play at the Major League level, they have huge value for them. And inserting guys and you know, a couple of those guys will hit and end up being everyday players for them. And so I wouldn't be surprised if you know, that trade that they just made with the White Sox and the Reds, that was a setup for their next move in Tampa more than it was Fernandez. Everyone kind of focused on Fernandez. I think it's been more, hey, let's focus on Tampa and see if there's something we can do there.
Another big name on the pitching market is from our friends in Japan, Land of the Rising Sun. Kenta Maeda, posted by his team in Hiroshima. You know, Duke, I think the question is always, how is a guy who stars in Japan, and he's won the equivalent of the Cy Young over there twice, how's that going to translate to the major leagues? What kind of an appeal is there for Maeda right now?
Well, there's a high level of appeal because I think the evaluation that I've heard the most is a good number three starter. Well, there's plenty, you know, those type of guys are getting $90 million, $100 million plus on the marketplace. So there's plenty of interest, and you know, I think you have to really do your homework on these type of guys. You know, Tanaka came over and had a hard time pitching every fifth day. Darvish did pitch every fifth day, but he broke down. Daisuke is broken down. So there's a lot of innings pitched and workload that they've built up over there in Japan. That's something that you have to factor in. But, you know, teams like the Dodgers in particular, who do a good job scouting overseas, would have interest because he's a known quantity from their evaluation side. But he's also a guy that, you know, you have a comfort level from a marketing side of things. There's a lot that he brings to the equation, and he doesn't have a draft pick attached to him too. So there's another pitcher that would have some interest. So $20 million for them for a posting fee isn't that big of a deal. I think you might get a couple teams interested at that, and I would give the Dodgers being the front runner in something like that.
Yeah, I think they kind of have to be at this point because of everything that's gone wrong for them on the pitching front this offseason. And it seems like this Hotstill season, so much of the focus has been on pitching. Let's talk about the outfield market a little bit. One guy that's, you know, has signed and signed a huge deal, obviously Jason Hayward. We've talked about him, but there's a lot of big names out there. This market's been very slow to develop. You're talking Justin Upton, Yoán Cespedes, Alex Gordon, Dexter Fowler, Denard Span, list goes on and on. Second-tier guys, Shane Victorino, Marlon Byrd. When you look at that entire mix, where do you see certain guys ending up, and why has this market been slow to develop?
I think it's been a little slow. There's a couple of things that, you know, the qualifying offers attached. I think the asking price has been very high. I think you have a couple of teams that don't need outfielders. Some of the teams that do need outfielders are more mid-market clubs, not really likely to pay $130, $140 million. I think there's a couple of those type of factors. And plus, some of those free agents, you know, have been around to a couple teams, and they have some sort of baggage that's with them that teams have to sort through and have to decide if they want to spend $140 million, $130 million on them. So, you know, I think Gordon, I still feel like Gordon's best fit is back with Kansas City. I'm not so sure he's going to go there, but I did an article for MLB.com on Cespedes. So they picked five teams out there, Angels and Tigers, Orioles, if they don't go down the Davis route, could be certainly a team. You know, you kind of go you think about those, that route there. Now, Angels are up against the luxury tax, so, you know, that may limit them. But, you know, there's still plenty of suitors out there for the players. It's just a matter of where does that price tag end up? You know, and usually we see them off the board. Right now, I think of the top 20, we've seen 13 still out there on the free agent market. A little unusual for this time of the year.
Yeah, it really is as we approach the new year and still a ton of outfielders out there. Now, setting aside Jason Hayward, who's obviously found a new home with the Cubs, when you look at the pitching market, I think the main domino that had to fall was David Price, and then things, even though Zimmerman did sign before him, but once Price signed with the Red Sox, then things started to come together. On the outfield side of things, who's the one guy of the remaining guys still out there that, who's the one big domino that has to fall before the others fall into place?
I don't know if it's one. I think it's just pick one. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know if you could specifically say, well, once Gordon goes, the rest will go. I think if you just take one of those guys, and maybe it's Davis, because Davis is really the only first baseman of the group, and if he were to sign somewhere else, that puts the Orioles in play in the outfield as well. And I don't think there's a ton of teams out there looking for first baseman. So, you know, he's a guy that if he signs, then you know where others stand, and, you know, the Orioles are willing to spend some good money. I think the other outfielders out there are kind of sitting there waiting to say, okay, if that blows up on Davis, we're going to Baltimore as a spot for my client. Clearly Upton, he's from Virginia, you know, right there nearby. Cespedes would be a great fit. So Gordon, the left-handed bat, really fits better in Baltimore. So they have a couple things going on there that, you know, if you see any one of those guys, I think if they go, then you'll have a chance to mark yourself or grade yourself against them, and I think you'll see the others go.
Are you a little bit surprised that there has not been more of a market for a guy that led the major leagues in home runs and has done so two of the past 3 years?
Well, a little bit, you know, outside of the fact that, you know, you look around the league and you see first baseman, how many people need actual first baseman / DH, you know, DH first base, you know, obviously the American League, it's pretty tight when you look at overall, unless, you know, his market comes back, which I don't expect it to. I don't think Boston or the Yankees or Toronto are going to play at that level. Those are three right off the top of your head that you go, wow, he'd be a good fit there. So, you know, Tampa certainly can't afford it. And then you go to the side of the Central, they don't really need that too many people in the need of first baseman. Same thing in the West, although the Angels, I still feel like, could be a fit there. They don't seem to want to spend that money. And the Cardinals were rumored to be needing a first baseman. They don't seem to want to spend money on him. The only other team is Houston, and they haven't spent a ton of money overall. So they could come in, I guess, at the last minute. But I am a little surprised that there hasn't been more teams knocking on his door.
Yeah, and you mentioned the positional limitedness of Chris Davis, but still, for a guy that's got that undeniable power, a little bit surprising that the market's been slow to move for him in particular. Duke, as we come down the home stretch here, I want to focus on the Nationals a little bit, talk about a team that's had a rough winter along with the Dodgers and maybe the Cardinals too. You know, heavily pursued Ben Zobrist, that fell through. Pursued Brandon Phillips, that fell through. Aroldis Chapman, through no fault of theirs, that fell through. What do they need to do? They've got, you know, two closers on the roster. Do they move One, do they move both? What's the blueprint here?
Well, and they made a run at Jason Hayward, late run at him too, you know, and he could have been a guy that could have played center field. So I think a couple things. They need a second baseman. So if they don't go rekindle Phillips, those talks, I think they'll be in the mix for Murphy, who they tried to trade for a year and a half ago. Maybe Howie Kendrick, one of those two. I think that's a better fit. They need a little more experience, I think, up the middle in the infield and overall. And I think they need an offensive piece. I wouldn't be surprised if they go down the starting pitching route as well. One of those lesser guys they've been rumored to be in on Wei-Yin Chen. If they did a Chen and a Murphy or a Chen and a Kendrick, that would be a pretty good little winter. They've already revamped their bullpen. You mentioned it. Papelbon, we'll see if they keep him in the spring. I mean, Dusty Baker, I could very easily see him saying, "Hey, let me deal with it. That's my forte. He's a great communicator. I can keep peace and harmony in the clubhouse." It's not going to be that easy to do, but I could see them kind of convincing him. And I don't think Mike Rizzo wants to cut the ties unless he really feels like it's untenable. So they could have a super bullpen. You know, when you look at it, Storen, I still think would be moved. I would not be surprised if there's some interest and they move him. But I really like the deal that they made when they got picked up. Gott's a guy that could close there from the Angels in the Escobar deal. So, Trinan was a below-the-radar guy. Barrett was probably overused to some degree, but he's got a good arm. It's going to be, a far different pen this year than we saw the past year.
Yeah, and like you said, we hope that Dusty Baker can keep the peace between Papelbon and Bryce Harper, who I don't believe are going to be exchanging Christmas cards this winter.
I would say no.
I would say no to that, too. Is your Christmas shopping done?
It is all done. We spent the weekend doing it. How about yourself? Are you done?
No, I'm bad.
You can go online, and it's free shipping.
Oh, really?
Just to let you know, any of you procrastinators. And you can still get it by the 24th.
Well, you're quite the salesman. I'll have to do that because department stores are not my thing.
Get on it.
Shopping's not my thing. Baseball is our thing, though. We thank you for listening to the last Hot Stove podcast before the Christmas holiday. And happy holidays to all of you out there. For Jim Ducat, Matt Wehmeyer signing off for the MLB.com Hot Stove podcast presented by K Jewelers.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.